Monday, March 5th. This is the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education, or Education Subcommittee is probably a better way to put it. And today, as you all know, because you're here, we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 5529, the Oregon Health and Science University. So we obviously we have several people who are eager to testify, I assume, in support of probably the governor's budget, but you never know. So obviously, we have at the latest until 4:30 in the afternoon. And so to accommodate everybody, number one, I'm going to say if you can be concise, well, you have to be concise and very brief, sort of 2 minutes, 3 minutes maybe. I shouldn't look over just at the lab coats. This is so ironic. Usually when I go to the doctor, I say, can you just stay longer and talk? And now I'm saying you got to be short and then leave. You know. But feel free to stay.
Training exercise.
I know. This is actually good. There's another. You can go from committee hearing to committee hearing and testify now. So we appreciate that. And we have... So I'm going to try to call you up also. Perhaps if you're with another person or if there's a small group and you have not the same agenda or comments to make, but if you are sort of with folks, it might be more expeditious if we can have two or maybe three people come up at the same time. So we'll try to, if you can work with us, we'll have allow everyone to have their opportunity and we'll have a better hearing. So, but first, I want to give the opportunity. We have Senator Jackie Winters is here, as is the president of Western Oregon University, Mr. John Minahan. So I'm going to ask them to lead us off. And senators and presidents of universities can take as long as they want on this committee. That could be dangerous.
I remember that.
Yeah, that's right.
For the record, my name is Jackie Winters. I'm state senator. I represent Salem, Monmouth, Turner, Almsville, and I'm here today. As most of you know, I have not been in the building on a regular basis. I just recently experienced where I needed the support of the nursing and the medical community. I had an aortic and a double femur bypass. And I want to thank the medical community, particularly the staff at Salem Memorial Hospital, because prior to that, you know, my walking ability was extremely limited, and I can walk again. And that leads me into why, you know, I believe that it is very important that we support the OSHU and Western Oregon University nursing program that is being planned. Back in 1999, when I was in the House, I raised the issue then about having adequate nursing staff. If you look at what has happened over time, we haven't done a very good job of planning and making certain that we have the workforce ready. We have this issue of not only the limited ability to train, but also the lack of individuals that are in a pipeline to be able to take care of the growing population. And I'm a part of that chronologically advantaged group that is growing here in the Valley. I think we have a huge opportunity to solve some of those problems by making the necessary investment to ensure that we do have nurses ready. I'm just going to share with you just some statistics on Salem. Currently, Salem Memorial Hospital is operating with 100 nursing physicians on the field, representing 70 FTEs. In addition, there were 850 nursing program applications received statewide for 190 positions available. So it isn't as though we don't have an interest. Western Oregon University currently offers the first 2 years of prerequisites for the nursing programs, Students complete their prerequisites course and apply for admission at OSHU. So there's a good normal linkage between Western and OSHU. In addition is the linkage that I think we can have with Corvallis, if we begin to look at the valley and the community and the resource availability. We also have here, as you know, in Salem, Chemeketa, which has a nursing program. My interest is to assure, and I think we have a responsibility in this building, to assure that we have the resources that are necessary to make certain that we have a healthy community. We talk a lot in this building about healthy kids. We talk a lot in this building about the Oregon Health Plan. We talk a lot in this building about access and affordability. Well, I would beg you to think about, if we don't have the nurses, the doctors, the allied health staff community, then those programs that we're planning or we're talking about will not be able to be implemented, because it does take the nurses who make certain that individuals like myself get the care that they need when they go to the hospital, or get what they need when they go to see a doctor, or get what the children need when they come into pediatrics. And so to me, this is a very important piece of planning to assure that we do have access. And also, I think the affordability piece goes along with it. With me is the president of Western Oregon University, John Minahan, and I'm sure he can probably add a little more to it. And I see my colleague, Senator Morris, who would also benefit because he represents Corvallis, and that's just, we're just like neighbors. But I implore you and to join me in assuring that we do have the funding for OSHU and Western Oregon Nursing Program.
Thank you. Representative Colizio, Senator Devlin, committee. For the record, my name is John Minahan, the president of Western. I was before this committee some 2 weeks ago indicating some of our plans in relation to nursing. So I'm going to make only a couple points and indeed follow the instructions to be brief. We've had a long working relationship with the Oregon Health Sciences University, over 20 years, in my recollection, since I've been there. We have had a connection with them in relation to anatomy and physiology. They provide the human cadavers for our laboratory at the university. They have, over time, cooperated with us as we developed our programs in biology. I must tell you, they're high-quality programs. Each year we require the graduates of the program who are going on usually to in medicine or dentistry or to graduate school PhD programs in biology to take the graduate record examinations, which is a national exam, which registers just the national level of achievement in biology. Our students over the last 10 years have usually scored in the top 3% nationally. They've gone down as far as the top 5. We are an extremely powerful program. And we are prepared to continue this program by expanding it to nursing. The second issue relates to the condition of minority representation in the nursing field. I think nationwide there is about an 8% representation of minorities, at least Hispanics and Latinos in the field. In Oregon, it may be as low as 1 or 2%, according to the studies that have been done here in Oregon. We currently have a participation rate of Hispanic students around 12%, with a total minority participation rate of about 15% at the institution. We have experience in recruiting and retaining and supporting minority students in an area which is very, very important, namely healthcare. The Oregon Center for Nursing and the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council recommend that the supply of nurses should represent the distribution of people, other people by race and ethnicity that they're serving. We think in the Mid-Valley the number is probably 20% of our population is Hispanic. And so even at our school, with the good record we have, we're below that distribution rate here for the Mid-Valley. We think we can provide that kind of access and retention of minority students in the nursing program. I could say a lot more about this. The studies are clear. There are a few outlying studies that indicate perhaps that the number of the population of nurses is about even to the need. But the fact is that's a very kind of an outlying study from what I can tell through the scholarship we used. We also don't propose to produce this program in any way as a money maker at the university. I have been responsible for a nursing program before in the state of Florida, and I will be thankful and pleased and diligent to make sure that we are in fact breaking even. The real issue here is in fact the issue of service. And I offer one last moral argument, and that is that good people are in fact both obligated to alleviate suffering and in fact act to do so when given the opportunity. We have such an opportunity in the field of nursing here in the Mid-Valley at Western. We intend, if permitted, to fulfill that obligation. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, President Minahan and Senator Winters. I think I speak for all the committee. We're glad to see you here, if I could say, you look great. So are there any questions or comments? Am I going to get in trouble for saying that?
Yeah.
I hope not.
Well, my carefully crafted statement, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very
much. And my thank you goes to all the thoughts and prayers. And like I said in my testimony, a lot of thank you goes to the men and women who helped to make certain that I recovered. And I think sometimes we forget about that there are those that are helping to make us well or to keep us well. And we in this building that are dealing with policy, and we tend to deal with it in pieces. And I just want for you, as you deliberate and you think about this budget, that this is one extremely important piece for the future. It is a piece that not only is the healing piece to make certain that I was able to get up out of the bed so I can come back to this building, but if we don't have the nursing staff or the medical staff, then my chances and others' chances of making it back become slimmer. I can't impress even more. And we do have, I think, with looking at what they're doing at Western and looking at Eastern Oregon and our other university system, I think we have the ability to plan and to make certain we have the staff adequately for the future, so that we don't run the risk that we have been running, that we do not have enough people in the pipeline. And certainly recognizing that we are advancing, as they say, we're living longer, all of us are, and with that comes more medical issues. As a part of the chronologically advantaged group, I am glad that we're living longer, and I am very glad that we have the ability to bring me back to these marble halls. So thank you, Chair, and thank you. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Senator Winters and President Minahan. I think we're eager to hear from the folks. So thank you again. Appreciate it. And I just wanted to let the committee members know that you should have received on your desk, there's written testimony from a variety of supporters of OHSU, and I ask the staff if they would please add the testimony to the record. Appreciate it. All right, so we have about 73 minutes, and about 30 people signed up to testify. So you're probably really a lot better at math than I am. So keep that in mind, and I'm going to call up first. It looks like I have three people together. Looks like Chris Campbell, Susan King, and Debbie. Is it Burton? Would you please come up? And then on deck, I have Daniel Sosi. Is that correct? Okay. Sosi. All right. I knew I was going to mispronounce that. Marvin Kaiser and Brett Rolette.
Good afternoon. Is it on? Yes. Good afternoon, Chairman Galizio and members of the committee. My name is Chris Campbell. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Center for Nursing, and I'm here to speak about the nursing shortage. The Oregon Center for Nursing is a nursing workforce center that was created in 2001 by the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council to execute and evaluate their strategic plan to solve the nursing shortage in Oregon. The Oregon Nursing Leadership Council and my board of directors are made up of representatives from five of the major nursing organizations in Oregon: the Northwest Organization of Nurse Executives, Oregon State Board of Nursing, Oregon Nurses Association, Oregon Council of Deans, and Oregon Council of Associate Degree Programs. So it's a collaborative effort from all the major voices in nursing, not voices which don't always agree but have for the strategic plan. We are a 501c3 organization. We've been funded primarily by the Northwest Health Foundation, grants and donations from hospitals and health systems and individuals, and lots of fundraising. We're located on the University of Portland campus, who donates office space and support services to us, and has done so since we opened our doors. Speaking to the nursing shortage, two studies have been done on the nursing shortage in Oregon. The first was done by Dr. Chris Tanner from Oregon Health and Sciences University, that was commissioned by the Northwest Health Foundation, the results of which laid the foundation for the strategic plan for the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council. That told us the picture of the nursing shortage in Oregon, and that we were facing a healthcare crisis if we did not do something about it. That plan, by the way, is in your packet. So you have the strategic plan, and for the sake of time, I won't go through those elements. The second study, then, was done by the Oregon Center for Nursing. Actually, the lead author was Dr. Debbie Burton, who was the executive director at that time. And that report, When Not If, a report on Oregon's registered nurse workforce, was published in 2005. You also have a copy of that in your packet. That was to evaluate where we were on the strategic plan and to get a more updated view of what the nursing workforce for registered nurses was in Oregon. This report, we believe, paints a credible picture of what we are facing in this state. It's a comprehensive analysis of the Oregon's workforce based on current literature and existing data, and we also did surveys and interviews with nurse educators, nurse executives, and nurses themselves. The major findings from this 2005 report were that nursing education programs are expanding as we had planned for them. We had planned to double enrollment. We've been increasing graduation rates, not just enrollments, by about 11% a year. That's a collaborative effort of community colleges, OHSU, and the private schools. So everybody's working on this together in Oregon. The 2006 data say we're at 76% increase in graduations. That's a phenomenal effort. No other state really has those kinds of collaborative results. Oregon also, as you heard Senator Winter say, has a large pool of qualified applicants who are not able to get admission into our programs. Nearly half of Oregon's nurses are over 50. I think we represent half of Oregon's nurses here. The proportion of nurses over 50 has more than doubled in the last 20 years. An exodus of retiring nurses is upon us now. Nurses may stay in the workforce a little bit longer, but we're still going to retire eventually. By 2010, from 2005, it was estimated that we would need 65 full-time faculty equivalent just due to retirements, to replace retirements. The 2006 data from the Oregon State Board of Nursing tell us that we have presently, today, or as of June 2006, 16 unfilled nursing faculty positions. The anticipated recruitment needs for retirement of nursing faculty is 56, and that we anticipate 36 additional nurses in the next 3 to 5 years. That's 92 anticipated nursing faculty, so those numbers are greater than we reported in 2005. Remembering that faculty need master's or doctoral education, we already are a little behind the ball in getting that support of nursing faculty going here. And the BSN pipeline is the entrance into graduate education. So the ACME curriculum of community college collaboration with OHSU will introduce many more community college nurses to baccalaureate and graduate education. So that's a good thing. Demand for nurses is going to grow steadily. We predicted using Oregon employment data as well as trend data nationally that we would need an additional 15,700 RN job openings in the next 15 years in Oregon. So we have a lot of work to do. The age distribution, as we have already heard this morning, of Oregon's population is changing dramatically. And the number of Oregonians 65 and older will exceed 1 million by 2005, which is about 25% of the state's residents. And we know older people use more health care. The nursing workforce crisis has become a central issue nationally as well as internationally. A number of studies have been done on the nursing shortage all over, and some have come to different conclusions, but for the most part, everyone agrees that we are facing a crisis now, and it's going to intensify in the next 5 to 10 years. Especially due to the aging workforce in Oregon and the aging population, our needs are a little greater for health care. Oregon is ahead of the curve because of the aggressive and innovative initiatives that have been undertaken by the collaborative effort of all the members of the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council, but we still aren't where we need to be. Investing in nursing education and investing in nursing workforce strategies such as retention programs should be a priority, I think, here for the legislature, because they are sound investments for Oregon healthcare workforce as well as the healthcare of Oregonians. Thank you for the opportunity to share our work with you, and I am willing to answer any questions you might have.
I think we'll just assume that we're not going to ask questions.
Okay.
We're aggressive. We will
stop us if you need to.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. My name is Susan King. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Nurses Association, also a board member with the Center for Nursing. I'm not going to repeat the statistics, which by now have become fairly common knowledge across the, at least in this legislature and across the state of Oregon. I would like to say I am here today to support the OHSU budget for the School of Nursing. I actually hold 2 degrees from that university, so have some familiarity with programs in the past. The budget that is before you, at least for the School of Nursing, is really very consistent with the ONLC plan that Chris Campbell referenced. Our plan addresses both recruitment and retention, although today I think we're focusing much more on recruitment in terms of the educational pipeline. This is the third shortage that I have experienced in my career, and most of my friends are getting tired of hearing me say that I'm not interested in being a part of the fourth. About the time that happens, if our roughly once a decade crisis becomes reality again, is that I'm going to be needing care probably rather than giving it. But I think we need to recognize that the legislature does have an opportunity, and I think we all as citizens do have an obligation to invest in not only the nursing workforce but other healthcare workforces as well. It has already been, I think, very eloquently illustrated by Senator Winters, the effect that the nursing profession, the medical profession, and others have on the life and health of one individual. But I think we need to realize that not only because we have an obligation to our citizens, but because we have probably not done the right thing in the past, that it is important for us to make the investments that we can make now. In the two prior shortages with which I'm familiar, those were solved, if you will, and I would submit they were never really solved. They were actually solved by changes in the environment that gave us a temporary relief. For example, in the 70s, the Medicare reimbursement changes actually resulted in patients having very short lengths of stay, as they do now, but they were much more well upon exit from hospitals. So the nursing workforce, the effect on the nursing workforce was somewhat blunted by changes in the reimbursement environment. That's not true today. We have short lengths of stay in Oregon hospitals, under 4 days, but patients who are in hospitals are sick. They require intensive care while they're there, intensive preparation for their discharge, and very complex care management after they leave the hospital. So we can't use strategies in the past, which in some cases were ignore it and it'll go away, or wait for changes in the reimbursement environment to make a difference in our nursing workforce. It is important that we invest, as Chris Campbell said, investment in the portion of the School of Nursing request that is going to go to providing additional educators is going to help us catch up, but we need to do more than catch up. We need to catch up and get ahead with nursing faculty. It will also yield 177 baccalaureate-prepared nurses statewide, and I think it's important for us to remember that OHSU's School of Nursing program, with its satellite campuses, has already been making a significant effort in educating students in the local area and has shown retention rates so that the state as a whole, not just the Portland metro area, is benefiting from their services. So I'm not going to belabor the point. I do think this is the time for us to make an investment because the health, all of our future health is going to depend on it. I'd be happy to answer questions at a later time if you like. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. King. And I just wanted to point out one. If you're submitting written testimony, keep in mind that we will read it, and the most effective means in terms of testifying is just talk to us rather than reading actual written testimony. I'm not in, not trying to imply that either of you did, but I just, FYI, I forgot to say that. So, Dr. Burton?
Thank you. I'm Representative Gleason, member of the committee. I'm Deborah Burton. I represent Providence Health System. In the audience behind me is C.J. Merrill, nurse executive from Providence, Milwaukee. I'm here today representing an employer. Providence Health System is the largest employer of registered nurses in the state of Oregon. We operate 7 hospitals, over 40 clinics, a huge range of long-term care, community-based, home health, hospice, on and on and on. And as the largest employer in the state of Oregon, I'm here simply to say if there is any confusion or suspect in the trends, data, and various reports that are out there about the nursing shortage, as an employer, I will tell you the shortage is with us now, and it's real. And I will tell you that because we happen to have the workforce that's older than the state of Oregon. The good news, bad news is Providence is a great employer, therefore nurses stay with us till the dawn of time. Therefore, they're older on average than the average nurse in the state of Oregon. So what is impending in the state has already hit us in Providence. We have also gotten great recognition for what is called the Providence Scholar Program, where we have already invested $9 million in complete subsidy in tuition for nurses who will graduate from the University of Portland and come back and work for us, and that's a great thing, but it's a drop in the bucket. And today, as the shortage hits us, as the retirement exodus happens, starting somewhere between 2009 and 2011, depending on how you count, we could not keep up with retirements alone, even if we hired every graduate from every baccalaureate program in the state of Oregon. So although we have done everything we can in ramping up joint faculty and making more clinical placements, because you know everyone thinks the solution to this is just create more nursing seats in the classroom, and that's great. But the requirements to produce a nurse include at least two years in clinical education, and we simply don't have enough patients in beds to accommodate the number of students. So I'm here to say that our state is being penalized for some really good reasons, and as Chris said to you, we have won the gold standard award for being the highest in our increased percentage in what we've done collaboratively to squeeze every seat out of the pipeline, public and private, as it exists today. But those percentages simply don't even begin to scratch the surface for what we'll need once this exodus begins. And so I would like to remind you that what we have to do in those 100 empty positions at Salem, or what is upon me and on my system, rural and urban throughout the state, is we start using what we call renting nurses. These are agency nurses who aren't on our payroll, or more often, they're short-term and long-term contracts with what are called travelers. Travelers don't pay taxes in Oregon. Their employers aren't here in Oregon. They come in, they work 2 weeks, 2 months, they leave. This is not a way to provide the kind of quality care and good care that all Oregonians deserve. So I will answer any questions you may have, but want to tell you as the employer, this is no joke, and you can slice and dice the data any way you want. The shape of the curve doesn't change. It just moves a little back and forth.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Well, Dr. Zoll, I think you made a very effective case, and really appreciate you coming down here and testifying today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, we now have Dr. Pronounce your last name for me, please.
Soci.
Soci, and then also on deck, Marvin Kaiser and Brett Rolette. Okay. Yeah, maybe you can come up.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Dan Soci. I'm a regular dentist here, and I practice here in Salem. Oregon and the nation are facing a shortage of dentists. Here in Oregon, silicone wafer manufacturers like our pure snow runoff water, but it gives those of us who grow up here teeth that are more vulnerable to dental cavities. Because of our soft water and the subsequent number of cavities, Oregon is one of the least populated states to have our own publicly funded dental school. The need here is great, especially now that we don't have fluoride added to our drinking water. There are 55 dental schools in the entire United States. Some of the states, like California, Texas, and New York, have 5 or 6 dental schools each. And that leaves few to spread out among the rest of us. There are no dental schools in Idaho, Montana, North or South Dakota, Wyoming, Utah, Alaska, Hawaii. Nevada is just starting something, and there's a small project in Arizona. Nothing in New Mexico. The concern that I have is the distribution of the impending dental shortage of dentists. Baby boomers are living longer with all sorts of medical problems, and they still have their teeth. Scientists have connected dental health with heart disease and directly to many other not-in-the-mouth medical issues. When my daughter went to dental school and it was time to apply, a friend of mine who was the department chair at UCLA told my daughter not to come there if she wanted to wind up practicing in Oregon. It turns out that dental school graduates often stay where they went to dental school. That's where their networking is most effective and where the jobs are offered. If we don't maintain our high-quality dental school here in Oregon, we won't be growing our own dentists, and dentists will have little reason to come here. Oregon will face an even more critical dental health future than it already does. Please vote to support Oregon's dental school. Thanks for your time and your services to the citizens of Oregon.
Hi, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. My name is Brett Rolette. I'm legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. We represent students at Oregon's universities, community colleges, and OHSU. And I'll be as brief as possible today. I know I'd like to see us get on to the students' testimony. But I wanted to add that as an organization, we fully support the governor's recommended budget for OHSU. We see it as a great step towards reinvestment in higher ed and reinvestment in OHSU. And while it is a first step, a lot of what we've seen over the past decade is really troubling. The average tuition at OHSU since 2001 has increased 60% for medical students to about $25,000 a year. It's increased 69% in the School of Dentistry and 34% for nursing students. And part of the problem we see with that is it has an impact on exactly who is applying to become the next generation of medical professionals in Oregon. Nationwide, we've seen a 20% decrease in the number of underrepresented communities members that are applying to go into this field. And as a whole, those applying just to the medical field, we've seen 60% of those students come from families in the upper quartile of income earners in our country. So where you used to be able to grow up in the state and it was a dream for anyone to become a member of the medical profession, it's no longer really the case anymore. The debt that the students are incurring is becoming greater and greater each year. And I look at some of the average that I included on my testimony, and then I talk to some of the students that are here today, and their debt is much greater than the average. So while we know what the average debt is, do keep in mind that for many students, their debt is much greater. And so please, as you move forward, we encourage you to support the governor's recommended budget for OHSU. We had a lot of students at the Capitol about a week and a half ago talking to you about our recipe for what's going to make Oregon stronger. And we see investment in OHSU as doing that, definitely making Oregon stronger and keeping the dream alive for all Oregonian children that want to get into the medical profession, that they'll be able to regardless on income. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Galizio and members, I'm Marvin Kaiser. I'm the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences at Portland State University. And I'm here to support OHSU and its partnership with the OUS system. I'm speaking specifically about our relationship with Portland State. There are several ways in which this is working. The most notable is in the pipeline issues. There are a couple of areas just to speak about that. Part of it relates to OHSU's ability and willingness to work with the OUS system, and in which we are very grateful. So an example for us is that faculty from OHSU are at our university in introductory courses for individuals who are interested in the health professions. Two of the fastest growing majors at our university are chemistry and biology. And in many ways, I believe that's a tribute to the relationship with OHSU. Just to suggest, in last year at OHSU, more students who attended PSU matriculated to the School of Medicine than students from any other university or college in the United States. Last year, in 2006, 27 members of the OHU entering class of medicine came from Portland State University. And this relationship has been growing. In the dental field, in 1999, 13 PSU students matriculated. In 2005, 31 students. And I think it's a tribute, we believe, to the close relationship that OHSU has with the state's system of for undergraduate work. I want to mention one other program which we are particularly proud of working under the leadership of OHSU, and it's called the Health Careers Opportunity Program. And this with OHSU's leadership, this is an attempt to get underrepresented students that are coming into the pipeline. So while they're still in high school, how can we get them interested in health careers? How do you get them into the proper kinds of science classes? Those kinds of things. This has been a very successful program in the high school pre-matriculation program. OHSU accepted in this program 22 students. 21 of those were Oregon residents, and we're pleased that 8 of those 21 are now at PSU studying, but so to create the pipeline. Finally, I would say that we're also very pleased with through our science education program to be working with the Beaverton Public Schools in one of their new magnet schools, which will start next year, which is a health professions magnet school, so as to getting students who take the appropriate science, math courses, as well as the other courses, so that as they're coming through these pipelines, is the recipe, I believe, in the long run for success. And we congratulate OHSU and the leadership they've given to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kaiser. And I think you like the way it is in terms of OHSU and PSU as separate institutions. Is that right? I'm not going to comment on that. Dr. Sosi, I think you were nodding there.
I went through the Portland State program. It's outstanding.
Great.
I got out of the Army, and I went to the Dallas School. Where do your kids come from? Because I'm going to play it to win. 23 at that time came from Portland State, 8 from University. If I'm going to be a dentist, where am I going to go to school? Portland State.
There you go. See, this is fortuitous. So.
I think we do want to talk about the partnership between our institutions, but not necessarily today, okay? Thank you.
Touché. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay, so the exciting thing is we now have a fourth page of people who want to testify, and so keep that in mind. So now I'd like to call up John Rubin, Doug Riggs, David Goldberg, and following that we will have James Lace, Mike Wright, and Brad. Must be a med student. I can't read it. Is that Brad? Right? Where are you, Brad? It's already taken hold, that the penmanship thing, but that's all right.
Sure. Chair Glazio and members of the committee. For the record, I'm David Goldberg, the Executive Director of the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute. And I'd like to speak for a moment. I've given you written testimony, and I won't read it, but I just want to summarize a few of the points here. One, we're facing a perfect storm, and it's not only in Oregon, but it's pretty extreme in Oregon. I mean, in the next 20 years, Oregon will probably be the fourth oldest state in the union in terms of percentage of population over 65. We've got the blessing of increasing our population and increasing the age of our population, and unfortunately with that also comes the increasing age of our healthcare workforce. And so we've got demand going up for healthcare by population increase and by aging, and the ability to meet that demand being squeezed pretty tightly as a result of baby boomers retiring. This is not unique to healthcare, it's not unique to Oregon, but it's certainly one we're going to face very extremely here. I know a question has come up as to whether there's a nursing shortage. You've heard from the experts in the nursing field that indeed there is, and I can only overwhelmingly say yes again, and there's lots of evidence for that, and I'd like to give you a bit of it. One, in the same report that the Oregon Department of Employment crafted, it was indicated that a third of nursing openings take more than 60 days to fill. Now think about that. I mean, living wage positions that are benefited in all over the state are taking more than 2 months to fill, a third of them. This is much longer, in fact, in rural areas where the impact can be much greater. You heard briefly from Dr. Burton about the traveling and agency nurses. Well, here's some interesting information about that. Small hospital in Tillamook County, the Adventist Health Tillamook County Hospital, spent in 2005 $628,000 on traveling and agency nurses because they could not recruit them to their facility. Bay Area Hospital in Coos Bay in 2006 spent $2.4 million on traveling and agency nurses. The Oregon State Hospital here in Salem spends on average $360,000 per month on contracted agency and traveling nurses because there aren't psychiatric nurses available to staff that facility. This is going to become even more of a dilemma as the hospital is replaced with two new facilities of totaling 1,000 beds, where the projection from the leadership at the Oregon State Hospital is that an additional 400 psychiatric nurses will be required to staff that facility. Where they're going to come from is a major question we're trying to grapple with. Similarly, the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center in Pendleton reports spending upwards of $30,000 a month on traveling and psychiatric nurses. When professionals retire, they tend to be at the top of their field, and so they're specialists. And the place that we're seeing most acutely the nursing shortage now, frankly, is not in new graduates. And in fact, if you look in June, after most of the programs graduate new nurses, they have a time finding positions during the day shift, particularly in full time, because they all hit the market at once, and they're all novice nurses, and it requires a fair amount of orientation to assist them. Where we really have the greatest need, and where we need the pipeline to feed that, are in specialty positions in critical care nursing, in operating room nursing, in emergency department nursing, in psychiatric nursing, and public health nursing. And there are extreme shortages right now in all of those areas, and as well as in geriatric nursing. The U.S. Bureau of Health Professions projects that we'll be 15,000 nurses short by the year 2020, and that may well be the case. You know, during the last 6 years of really defunding of the public sector as a result of the recession, and that's to no fault of this legislature, you folks had to grapple with the really tough decisions. Surprisingly, the nursing programs in the state have increased by 76%, and that has happened because the private sector has seen this need, faces this need on a daily basis, and has invested all over the state in supporting nurse faculty, supporting nursing programs, to the extent where at Clatsop Community College, at Central Oregon Community College, at Southwest Oregon Community College, full-time nursing faculties are paid for by the local hospital. Now add that to the story that you've heard from Providence, investing $9 million in the University of Portland, and we've got the ability from the private sector to see not only the economic benefit, but the healthcare benefits for the state. One of the biggest issues that you are facing as legislators in this session is the issue of access to healthcare. In my travels around the state in preparing a white paper on sort of what the state faces in terms of health workforce, it was clear to me that nearly a third of Oregonians have limited to no access to primary health care. And that third comes from the uninsured, which is the largest group, 600,000+, and I'm sure Senator Morse, you and all the work you're doing, know these numbers in your sleep. But in addition to that, the folks that do get coverage through the Oregon Health Plan and through Medicare are having very tough time finding access to primary care, mainly because they're in such short supply. And supplying the state with more primary care providers in the form of nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and primary care physicians is desperately needed as we increase and grapple with the access issue. The budget proposal that the governor has presented for OHSU needs to be supported. Frankly, it's a minimum of programs that need to be supported right now. It takes us, the whole governor's proposal that is funding health care education in the state, while very robust, with $28 million worth of investment, still takes us back to 1999. I mean, that's the reality that we're facing right now in terms of coming out of this recession. And so I strongly support the OHSU budget that's been recommended to you. The OCME curriculum, that is a piece of it, in the nursing part, addresses the question that you brought to the educational community of looking at a seamless transfer for students from community colleges to four-year universities to be able to get degrees. The nursing faculty training is desperately needed. As you heard, the average age of a nurse faculty in the state is over 56. The only master's program in nurse education is at Washington State University in terms of the closest one to here. It's desperately needed, and OHSU is the right place for it. The dental needs in the state are extreme. We don't even have a decent database of where the dentists are deployed in terms of how much they're working, whether they have access to, whether patients have access to them because their practices are so full. That's something we're working on as we speak. In terms of medicine, we have another crisis, and the problem with that one is that it's 8 years to fix. That is, that pipeline, as you get people entering medical school, we won't see anything for a minimum of 8 years on the other end. And so the faster we address that, the better. And the OHSU strategic vision for doing that is to disperse medical education into the communities. And frankly, it's a smart one. Having been the director of rural practice and rural care for the state of New Mexico, I know how important it is to recruit students from rural communities if there's any hope of them going back to those communities to ultimately take care of the populations there.
Can you conclude?
Yes, I agree.
I can see the debt clock going on the students.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, they're thinking about how much debt, and they're getting nervous. So.
Well, the last piece of the budget piece for OHSU is the Area Health Education Centers, and these are really the outreach fingers of the university into the communities where they know on the ground what the needs are community by community, and so I strongly urge support of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, my name is John Rubin, and I'm professor and chair of the Department of Zoology at Oregon State University. I'm here as well on behalf of Sherman Bloomer, who's the Dean of the College of Science, who had to be out of state this week. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you in support of OHSU's request for funding to expand training of health professionals in Oregon, in particular the Oregon Medicine Collaborative, or the OrMed program, which I think we haven't heard too much about yet today. This partnership between OHSU, OSU, UO, or UVO, community health systems, and physician practices will increase to about 160 per year the number of medical students graduating each year, with increased opportunities for Oregonians statewide to become physicians. We all know how fast medical costs are increasing and how the demand for medical services are growing. Perhaps more troubling to me is the growing shortage of physicians and other healthcare professionals needed to deliver those services throughout Oregon, and most particularly in our rural communities. OHSU proposes an innovative solution to this problem through the regionalization of medical training physicians. The partnerships they are forging in Corvallis with OSU and with Samaritan Health Services, in Eugene with UVO and Peace Health, and in Bend with the St. Charles Medical Center promise to expand the number of students trained and place those students in communities of varying population sizes and composition. This program, coupled with Oregon Consortium for Nursing Education and proposed OHSU Oregon Rural Scholars Program, provides steps to address the healthcare workforce shortage, as well as to help shape new models for the education of healthcare professionals. The College of Science at OSU and the School of Medicine at OHSU have been working to develop and plan the curriculum and facilities to support the training of medical students in Corvallis. We are very excited to be part of this proposed program, as well as to forge a new relationship with Samaritan Health Services in Corvallis. OSU prepares more undergraduate students to enter professional programs in medicine, nursing, and other healthcare professions than any other institution in the state. We are committed to the development of a robust and well-trained healthcare workforce. The ORMED Collaborative builds on our expertise by taking advantage of our regional community health networks. OSU has had a long collaboration with OHSU through our College of Pharmacy, and we are looking forward to welcoming the first group of medical students to the Corvallis campus. We are excited to be a part of ORMED, and I urge your support for the budget request to start the program on its way. Thank you for taking my testimony, and I read it because we hadn't heard too much about ORMED previously.
Thank you, Dr.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Appreciate it. So where's Dr. Lace? Would you mind if Dr. Lace has patients and has to leave at 4. Would you mind?
Not at all.
Okay. Appreciate it. The legislature does not want to block access to health care.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Jim Lace. I represent the Oregon Medical Association and the Oregon Pediatric Society. Thank you for taking that a turn. And I guess I'm a graphic example of the physician shortage. We're 3 doctors short today. We're in primary care, and so I blocked off an hour and came over here to try to testify, and I'm out of here. My testimony is very brief. We support the increase in doctors. We can tell you that there's a shortage in primary care. Rick and I are in about the same age group. He looks a little older than I do, but believe it or not, we're in the same age group, and we're all aging and getting older, and we're running out of doctors to take care of not only pediatric patients, which I do for a living, but also older patients. And so we need a desperate increase in the number of physicians, and we believe that by increasing the pool, increasing the number of students in the medical school classes, that that will begin to address the shortage. So.
Thank you very much for taking the time out, and appreciate it. Yeah, I'm going to stay out of this rivalry.
I request indulgence of the chair to go out of order.
Okay.
First off, let me introduce myself. My name is Rick Bopat. I'm a family physician. I'm on the list. And the reason I would like to go now is to show that we're here in partnership with Oregon State University and OHSU on this program. Dr. Lace and I have known each other for a very long time, and I think his young looks is a credit to taking care of pediatric patients as opposed to some of the patients I get to take care of. So, I am a graduate of the OHSU Family Practice Residency. I came to Oregon from Wisconsin because of that program. I have practiced in Lebanon for 28 years. I'm currently a member of the Oregon Health Policy Commission along with Vice Chair Senator Devlin. I speak on behalf of Samaritan Health Services, and Samaritan Health Services owns or manages 5 hospitals in Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties, Corvallis, Albany, Lebanon, Lincoln City, and Newport. And we are very excited about going into a partnership with OHSU and OSU on training medical students. Briefly, I've been teaching medical students for over 20 years in my practice, and almost to a person, they say that this is one of the best experiences that they've had, and it has to do with getting off of the hill where there's a tremendous number of trainees, getting into a less competitive place where there are more physicians to work with them. And since I've come to East Lynn County, I've watched as several very skilled primary care physicians left the area to go teach because most teaching programs were in metropolitan areas, and I look to reverse that trend. So we have some physicians that have joined our practice from this program, and we really come here as Samaritan Health to strongly support OHSU and OSU, University of Oregon, East Health, and others in forming a collaborative and support, encourage the legislature to provide funding to make that a reality. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Wilbat. So after Mr. Riggs, if Mike Wright and Brad Dreyfus?
Yes.
So thank you, Dr. Wilbat.
Mr. Chairman, thanks for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Doug Riggs on behalf of the Oregon Primary Care Association, and I'm going to be very brief. The Oregon Primary Care Association members served over 1 million visits in 2006 through our community health centers throughout the state. And we've taken many of you on tours throughout our health centers in Eastern Oregon, in the Valley, and in the Hillsboro-Beaverton area. And I think one thing you'll hear time and time again is how difficult it is for our centers to recruit providers for a variety of reasons. So I just am here to say ditto. I agree with all the testimony today, and I yield the balance of my time to all of the students who are here to testify today that this is a very important bill. OHSU is a great partner, and we support them 100%.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chairman Galizio. My name is Mike Wright. I'm the president and CEO of Well Partner. We are a pharmacy that serves the Oregon Health Plan and many of the managed Medicaid plans, as well as commercial plans and groups nationally. I'm here to support the governor's budget for OHSU and its work with OSU. As a pharmacy, clearly we need to graduate as many pharmacists as we can to support the growing need. Across the U.S., there's roughly a 10,000 person shortage of pharmacists, much like the nursing industry. So as one of the fastest growing businesses in Oregon, we're trying to create high quality jobs, but with the proportional shortage in Oregon as there is nationally, we need to work as closely as we can with the OSU and at OHSU to support the additional pharmacists. I'm also here to represent, I'm on the board of the Neuropsychiatric Institute at the OHSU, and we're doing I'm here to speak about the terrific work that's being done, the very advanced work that the university does in advanced research. And so with that, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Mr. Dreyfuss.
Yes, good afternoon. Chair Galizio, members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. Thank you very much for your time. And I do have to kind of give a disclaimer that since I was in fourth grade, my teachers have said I should probably go into medicine. So, it came true. So I'm currently graduating in about 3 months from MD and MPH program at OHSU, and I speak on behalf of the entire student body as student body president. And so I'm going to try and keep this as general as possible, and you do have my written comments along with approximately 35 other students from School of Medicine and School of Dentistry. I believe School of Nursing was submitted separately. So I'll try not to read verbatim. But first of all, we'd like to thank you very much for giving the $40 million back for the last biennium. It really did make a large difference for a lot of us. For all in-state medical students, it means $10,000 less we have to pay for tuition. So while at least for my class, I just took a poll, the average debt is approximately $200,000, the range being from zero for three people to $350,000, maybe about $40,000 more for students. So thank you for that. I could wax eloquent on my own situation, but I'll simply say that I am about $250,000 in debt, my wife and I are, just with our education costs. And it did affect my decision not to go into rural family practice residency. I went into emergency medicine, but unfortunately, cost of education and looking towards the future for rural health care and reimbursement did play somewhat of a role. Fortunately, not a complete role, but part of it. I already mentioned that there are about 35 other students who have testimony, and a bunch of us are actually here to give it. I'd like to say that, unfortunately, a lot of us really didn't consider the debt load when we went into medical school, myself included. And all of us, I would say, whether you're medical school, dental school, or nursing school, are all dedicated in serving. And serving the community as much as possible. So we'd also encourage you to really think about debt remittance. On the other side of residency, a lot of us would really jump at the opportunities to work in underserved areas if there's additional debt repayment opportunities. And I know some of the legislators are really thinking about, and we really appreciate that consideration. What else do I got? So I also should mention that with the rather static level of funding for OHSU over the past few biennia, we've been increasing the number of medical students. Obviously, you've heard about nursing students. And while that's happened, there's not been a congruent increase in student support, meaning tutoring services, services for multicultural and diversity affairs, etc. Our incidental fee itself has gone up over 300% just in my time at OHSU. So those are all very important figures. I guess OHSU students would contend that Oregonians deserve having nurses, dentists, and doctors that come from socioeconomic and culturally diverse backgrounds. And OHSU is charged with narrowing the cultural urban divide. And to accomplish this goal, AHEC, as well as OHSU's education mission, needs to be supported. OHSU needs to be able to recruit and retain students from diverse cultural and socioeconomic backgrounds if Oregon's going to narrow the healthcare provider shortage. I think we spoke a bit about the pipeline or the aqueduct model of funding K through graduate school, and that's something that students are very enthusiastic about at OHSU. I think in the past, creating that divide between K through 12 and graduate school actually contributed to OHSU students not speaking up for themselves as much, because a lot of us have children who are entering school and don't want to compromise funding for our kids growing up. And finally, I'd like to reiterate one of the comments that's in the written testimony. Todd Gifford, president of the School of Dentistry Student Government, is not here. But he really eloquently made the point that those of us who are here don't represent the mass of students who would like to be here. We're just a small fraction. OHSU students have lectured, it doesn't matter if you're nursing, dental, or medical school, about eight hours a day, and we also have clinical responsibilities we're not really able to dodge. Some of us are creative, and we're able to do that and come down and visit you today, but a lot more. So I hope you realize there are a lot more people who feel similar to me do. And I'd like to render the balance of my time to my fellow classmates who have some pretty compelling stories. And thanks again for your time.
Okay, thank you very much, and we appreciate it. All right, so I have... I apologize if I butcher your name. Angela Jones, Aaron Schneider, Robert... Is it Gould? And then on deck, so to speak, Dr. Ron Stock, Dr. Gary... Is it Crew?
Yes.
And Patrick... What is it?
Gary.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Angela Jones. Can you guys hear me? Okay. That's right. Okay. I moved to Oregon in 1998 from somewhere south of here with the goal of going to OHSU. Even back then, it had a well-known reputation for being excellent in primary care. I had recently completed a master's in gerontology from the University of Southern California with the goal of going into geriatrics and primary care. It took me 8 years to get into the fortress up on the hill, multiple attempts, and in that time I accumulated additional graduate school debt such that I entered OHSU with $70,000 in student loans. By the time I graduate, that will be over $300,000. Unfortunately, with Medicare reimbursements and many other factors the way they are, my goal of becoming a geriatrician in primary care is seemingly further and further away economically. I just can't realistically pursue a career in which one-third of my income would go to repaying student loans. I'm, you know, of course, looking into such things as the National Health Service Corps. I actually considered the military and their repayment for a while. So we'll see how things go in the next few years. But unfortunately, I'm currently, you know, considering some more competitive specialties that would more than likely lead me out of Oregon. I don't know if you all are aware that physicians tend to stay in practice where they do their residency. So as soon as I leave Oregon, the chances of my returning to practice in the state go down. This is where I'd like to be. This is where I've been for 8 years. It's where I worked and paid taxes, and, you know, this is definitely where I'd like to come back to. So hopefully the budget will pass, and we'll continue to maintain at least the debt that we have now, which for myself is $55,000 a year. Certainly don't want that to go up. Would love it to go down. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, and I think your child wants to live in Oregon. So what's your child's name?
Ayla.
Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. We'd love to have you stay, and we'll try to do what we can. So I don't know who's next. I'm sorry.
Chairman Galizio and to the rest of the committee. My name is Erin Schneider. I'm a third-year medical student, and I actually spoke to you 2 years ago, those of you who were on this committee. I want to start by giving you a big thank you for restoring our funds to OHSU 2 years ago. Because of your actions, there are a number of people sitting in the room and in classrooms and on clinical rotations who are here who wouldn't otherwise be here because of the prohibitive cost of medical education. And for Oregonians, we didn't see a tuition increase, and I want to thank you, really. I am an Oregonian through and through. I grew up in Gresham Public Schools, went to University of Oregon, and then was privileged to be the third generation of my family to go to OHSU. So I have a big stake in seeing it succeed. I think that OHSU has a number of unique things about it that set it apart from every other medical school in the country. Not only do we have an excellent scientific medical education, but OHSU has this very special focus on the humanitarianism aspects of medicine, the art of medicine, the patient-doctor relationship, patient safety, professionalism, all of these things that make medicine a profession to aspire to and not just to get a science education and practice. So we're very unique that way, and we are grateful to be here. I myself am pursuing a career in emergency medicine, and I will say that though the pull of emergency medicine for me is the excitement and being the safety net for health in general, I did base part of my decision on debt and loans and going through public education. I had racked up some, and now it's racking up even faster, so I'll leave the rest of my colleagues to talk about that. In the ER, we see the ill and the injured. Many of them do not have health insurance. We're taking care of these people. Sometimes our hospital has to go on divert because they're too full. This is happening citywide, statewide. We have a non-healthcare system right now, which is broken and which is leading to disastrous consequences, and we see that as if through a microscope in the ER. We have specialists who come in the middle of the night to take care of patients they'll be uncompensated for, but are taking great liability in taking care of, and only to come back the next day and see a full day's patients. It's really a bad situation. There are women who have to travel hundreds of miles in rural Oregon to have babies. There are senior citizens who can't get health care because the primary care physicians can't afford to keep up their overhead. So this question of access is related greatly to the question of workforce that we're talking about today. And the last thing we want to do here in Oregon is to discourage bright young Oregonians from staying here in Oregon and from going to OHSU. They stay at OHSU, a lot of them stay for residency, and then they stay here to be doctors here, like myself. We train a huge percentage of our class compared to all the other schools into primary care, but it's shrinking all the time, as you'll see if you read the testimony before you. As the students face hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, it's just not possible to think about becoming a rural primary care physician. I don't tell you this to garner your sympathy, but to ask for your support. By supporting OHSU, you support us. You support the future doctors, nurses, and dentists of Oregon, and it's only going to serve to prop up the patients in Oregon, your citizens, your constituents. So I really ask you to support the governor's recommended budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schneider.
Hi, Chairman Luizio, members of the subcommittee. My name is Robert Gould. I'm a first-year medical student at OHSU, and I'll try and be brief to let everybody else talk to. But I'm here today because I'm very concerned about the state of healthcare education in Oregon. I'm an Oregon native. I grew up just outside of Roseburg, Oregon, and went to Oregon State University. And my mother was actually a nursing instructor at Umpqua Community College, one of the community colleges that feeds into the nursing pipeline. But came to Oregon Health and Sciences University because I'm interested in staying in Oregon and serving the healthcare needs that are growing massively here. But I didn't consider the amount of debt that I would be accruing during my time here. As I sit here now, I'm about $35,000 in debt, and I've only been in school for 6 months. And by the time I graduate, I'll be at least $200,000 in debt. And though I'd like to say that money isn't an issue in considering what I want to do in my future career, this is definitely a consideration I have to make, especially concerning positions that might not be as rewarding financially, even though they're rewarding for serving people. So I haven't decided where I'm going to be heading after I graduate yet, but certainly a position in rural Oregon that would take me 20 years to pay off my loan and increase the payments to that to close to $500,000 is something that's kind of frightening and is a kind of a deterrent, frankly. But I'd also like to echo Brad's endorsement of the tuition, the loan reimbursement programs for rural practitioners after residency. That's something that would definitely affect my choices in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gold. Thank you. Okay, so we have about 17 minutes and 17 people. So this should be fun. And following Dr. Stock, Dr. Krug, and Mr. Kinney, we have Matthew Lewis, I think it's Han Ho, and Louise Shores.
So good afternoon, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. Thank you for having us this afternoon. My name is Ron Stock, and I'm the medical director of the Center for Medical Education and Research at Peace Health Sacred Heart Medical Center in Eugene, Springfield. And along with the University of Oregon and OHSU, we are beginning to build the infrastructure to provide clinical experiences for students to come to our community to get medical education. I'm a geriatrician and a family physician who I've practiced and lived in Eugene, Springfield for 18 years. I want to go on record here, Peace Health Oregon region, which includes facilities in Eugene, Springfield, Florence, and Cottage Grove, and along with Mel Pine, our CEO, as being strongly supportive of the OHSU budget, particularly the $7 million budget to expand regionalization of medical education. The students are a hard act to follow, but I think you've clearly got the point from their perspective, and so I'd like to add the physician in the community and the aging baby boomer perspective, if you will, of the crisis that is looming in front of us over the next 10 to 15 years in terms of physician workforce shortages in the state. It's clear that we're going to need more physicians in the state. In the last 2 years, ending in December, there were over 1,200 physicians that left practice in the state of Oregon, and the OHSU trained only 200. We've been a major importer of physicians in the state, and this problem is occurring all across the country. So this is not just facing Oregon, but everywhere else. And so the competition for physicians coming into the state and for having physicians in the state is going to become much more intense. We know from tracking data that 55% of the students that train here in medical school and in residency programs stay in the state. So to support what the students were just talking about. So we have a couple of choices here. We can either build a brand new medical school, and or we can use our existing resources with our higher education and health system resources to train medical students in the state. As a physician and a taxpayer, I can tell you that the most cost-efficient way is to use our existing resources. And we're fortunate to have the University of Oregon in our community, and Peace Health is enthusiastic about collaborating with them in developing a first-year curriculum, a first-year program for medical students in that state, or in our city. I can tell you that the physicians in the Eugene Springfield community are enthusiastic about training medical students in our city, and I know that Representative Barnhart has talked with many of them. And we're really anxious to have students and any other future opportunities in our community because of the importance, but also because it's important to our physicians to fulfill some of their professional obligation of providing teaching and learning as part of their profession. So the impact on our communities will be significant. Mentioned the fact that students coming to the community will get exposed to the community, and hopefully they'll return to our community in the future. We know that the physicians who are practicing in the community want to teach, and this can be part of is important for their own professional career, and also in retaining physicians in our community. There are many physicians that leave the community because they want to go to academic centers or they want to go someplace to teach, but we haven't had the opportunity to offer them teaching opportunities in our community, and this is important. It's important for students to be in the communities, also to get exposed to the University of Oregon. We believe that having students in the community at the University of Oregon will increase the number of students applying to medical students in this state, and I think that's an important piece. Finally, I want to say that I think the quality of care, when we regionalize medical education, the quality of care will get even better. And the reason is, try walking around the hospital or a clinic with a student with a white jacket on, you can be certain that you're going to have questions that you're going to have to go to the textbook yourself and look up, or have questions asked of you that you hadn't thought of in a long time, and really know why you're doing certain things, because you have a learner with you that you need to teach. There is a lot of support in our communities for this program. As you may know, in 2005, OHSU received a grant from the Miller Foundation to help support the expansion of medical education in the state. And OHSU provided some of that money to help us get started in Eugene. To support the infrastructure on the Eugene campus, the Oregon Community Credit Union is providing $100,000 a year over the next 10 years to help support that campus. Peace Health Oregon Region is providing a space for students and offices in order for the teaching to occur. And the foundation at Sacred Heart Medical Center has been very generous in terms of providing dollars for the infrastructure. Again, Peace Health Oregon Region strongly supports the $7 million ask in the governor's budget for the regionalization and expansion of medical education.
Thank you.
Chairman Lizio, member of the committee. My name is Gary Kluge. I'm the head of Human Physiology, Department of Human Physiology at the University of Oregon. I'm also co-chair of the committee, the faculty committee, which has been charged to look at the feasibility of implementing a first-year curriculum on the U of O campus. I've been involved in the regionalization of medicine project for almost 3 years now, and so I have a fairly unique perspective on perhaps both the goods and the bads. I want to talk to you a little bit today, very briefly, about the other side of the whole consortium project, which is what do we at a public university that's a non-medical institution see of value in this. I think there's an important point that needs to be brought up here. The coming of ORMED to Eugene, Oregon has already had a profound impact on the community, and that profound impact has had an equally stunning effect on my department. First of all, there's a great interest in medical careers on the part of undergraduates. 2 years ago, my department served approximately 200 undergraduates. The enrollment as of January of this year was 550. And so that's a good thing for us in the sense of it shows that what we're doing is appreciated. It shows that the interest in the career is, unfortunately, it calls into question whether or not we're going to be able to sustain that kind of growth and to serve those people in the manner in which they need to be served. Our answer to that, and I think it speaks to the issue of the consortium, our answer to that relates to the way that the Eugene physician and other healthcare provider community has been energized by this initiative. We have approximately 40 physicians right now who actively teach in our program. Some of them teach entire courses. Some of them help us with courses that we need to make more clinically oriented. Some of them open their practices to undergraduate students and so on. So in addition to the training of physicians, which of course is what the consortium is all about, it's also a very, very important thing in my department. The second thing that becomes really important is all of the people in my program do what is commonly referred to by people like the National Institutes of Health as translational research. And by that, the definition is that it's a program, even though we're a basic science program,
the translational part comes in with the ability to take the work that's done in our laboratories and actually apply it to patient care. That is kind of, that has, it's made a profound change in our department. We've increased our grant support over the last 5 years, approximately $3 million. We have two of our professors over the past year were just named as the outstanding young professors by the American Physiological Society in the particular disciplines in which they work. And so these things, the trickle-down effect, if you will, from the medical school initiative has had a really profound impact on my program. In addition to that, and probably equally as important, there's no secret at any college campus or any medical school in the United States that space is a terrible problem. Space to a researcher or space to an investigator is as important as dollars. And at the University of Oregon, we have a severe space crisis. The coming of the medical school initiative to Eugene has offered us an opportunity to look at space in a way that would have not been possible prior to the advent of this initiative. What I mean by that is that right now, Peace Health, the University of Oregon, and OHSU needs space, teaching space, research space in Eugene. We have the capacity, or we have the option, I should say, of being able to look at that issue, or those issues individually. And of course, if we create facilities individually, we massively increase the capital we have to invest in that. What is occurring, and is extremely exciting, I think, from all three of our perspectives, is the fact that we're spending some time now actually talking about shared space and shared facilities. One really good example of that is when OrMed comes to Eugene, we will need an anatomy lab. Anatomy is one of the first courses the medical students take in their first year. They need an anatomy lab. Anatomy labs are very, very extensive in nature and also extremely expensive. In my department, we teach 250 anatomy students every term. For two terms out of the year, plus we have a summer program in anatomy. So we're serving somewhere close to 700 to 800 students in anatomy in a given year. We could, of course, go off and build these facilities individually, but what's happening now is discussions are going on, three-way discussions are going on between the three partners in the consortium. It's how we could build a facility, a robust facility, that could be used every month of the year to serve not only graduate students, medical students, but also undergraduate students. So as you think, I know most of the comments that you've received about the regional initiative had to do with training the medical students, and certainly that's what it's all about, and that's important. But as you consider this budget, I would also ask you to consider the impact upon undergraduate programs at both U of O and OSU, and the fact that this is an extremely efficient way to approach this issue, not only in this, from the standpoint of training doctors, but also from the from the standpoint of training those individuals who have desires for medical careers. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Gould. All right, Mr. Kinney. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chairman Glizio and members of the committee. I feel like I've got to mix things up here and vote this thing down. Pretty strongly in support here. I too am here in support.
Mr. Chair. wait, excuse me, Mr. Kinney, Representative Barnhart.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kinney has got us away.
And he's got Mr. Kinney's going to identify himself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Patrick Kinney. I'm a first-year medical student as well. And I'm actually not an Oregonian. I come from Alaska. And I'm pretty good proof as to those people that didn't think about the financial decision too hard before they came. I was accepted into the University of Washington, which is my home state's medical school, and it has a significantly cheaper tuition. We're about $16,000 a year up there. But I listened to Mom's advice, and Mom said, go where your heart takes you. And but the program here is something really special, and it's very different than anywhere else I interviewed. There's a real feeling of momentum, the tram and the new buildings, and the interest on humanistic physicians, and there's a lot about this program that is very good, and it's why I chose to come here over probably the financially sane decision, which would have been to somewhere else, and I've been very, very pleased with my decision. But the burden is something that everyone's echoing here today, and it goes more than the tuition. I mean, we are unable to make any money during medical school. Everything is loans, and that's going to be that way for almost a decade before we see any foreseeable income coming back in. I mean, every cup of coffee we buy, every time we put quarters in the laundry to do our laundry, every time we pay our rent, we're accruing 8% interest on it over 10 years. I mean, our interest on our student loans right now is about what a credit card interest would be, and it's frightening. We'll be about $250,000 in debt, most of us, by the time we start seeing income come in. And it's impossible to think that that's not going to play into our decision on what field we're going to practice in. There's such a discrepancy between the medical fields, between the subspecialties and primary care. And unfortunately, it's in the primary care areas where you oftentimes see the highest malpractice insurance that's going to be paid out, too. I mean, as examples of OBG, excuse me, OBGYNs right here in Oregon, they're paying $11,000 a month. And this is before we buy our first house, and this is before we buy our first car or a decent car over $2,000, before we do any of the things about young professionals just getting started. And I think that a lot of my colleagues are echoing, we make great sacrifices as students and with our time and just this lifestyle that we've chosen. And a lot of our friends that have gone into physics and mathematics and doing doctoral degrees in chemistry, they're being paid to go to school. And I can see how that historically makes a lot of sense because physicians, you know, have a historically high payout potential when they're done. But things are changing and physicians are making less and malpractice is getting higher, and it's just getting a lot harder to go into those areas of medicine that we would like to go into. And along with that, a lot of us would love to volunteer our time for the underserved and traveling internationally and helping with medical practices all over. But it's just so hard to do when you've got such an overhead before you can even start paying back what you need to survive as a physician. So ensuring adequate funding for this institution is the first step in making sure that our tuition stays manageable for the next generation of healthcare professionals. And that goes for Oregon residents and those people that come to Oregon and plan on staying in Oregon as well. You know, there's a high percentage of OHSU residents in-state and out-of-state that choose to do their residencies here in Oregon, and then a very high percentage of those continue on to be the Oregon healthcare doctors. So I urge that you support this recommended budget and to support further legislation to reduce the burden on future healthcare professionals so that we may more effectively serve you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kinney. Appreciate it. Okay, so I'm calling up Matt Lewis, Han Ho, and Louise Shores. And note that it's 4:30 now. So if I guess what I would say is if somebody's already said what you were going to say, then your presence here means a lot. I have to say, just from the committee's perspective, even if I mean, just this turnout today, it really speaks volumes. So, but if you absolutely have to come up, so then you can. So, I don't know who's going to go first. Whoever.
Chair Galizio on the committee. My name is Louise Shores. I'm project director for the Oregon Consortium for Nursing Education. I have prepared a written statement, so I've continued to narrow down to 3 points that I would like to make from that and refer you to them, to the document for additional information. The consortium is an innovative collaboration unique in the country to the state of Oregon. We are a partnership of 7 community colleges and OHSU for implementation of a shared curriculum. All nursing programs in the state, those not planning to implement the consortium curriculum, support us and are participating in our activities. The competencies that we've developed for the new curriculum will create a new kind of nurse designed to meet the healthcare needs of future of Oregonians in the future. We'll emphasize more strongly than ever care of the chronically ill and care of the elderly because we believe that will be the future for healthcare needs in the state. These competencies were agreed to by consensus. They are very unprecedented amount of statewide collaborative effort in getting consensus on the competencies that the future of health or future nurses in the state would need, as well as the curriculum, which was adopted in 1 month after a period of 2 years of development by all schools that were going to implement it in the state. Having any curriculum adopted in a 1 month period of time is unique. So we're getting a lot of national attention for the work that we're doing for a collaborative nursing education program. As a result, the students will be able to get an associate degree in their community college and seamlessly progress to OHSU, remaining in their home community to finish the baccalaureate degree with a seamless financial aid package and co-admission to OHSU for the from the moment they enter the associate degree program. So I strongly urge that you support the package that will enable OHSU to be ready for those students when they enter the fourth year of the consortium program. And I would also like to echo my colleague's earlier comments about the faculty shortage and strongly urge your support of the master's for preparation of faculty. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Hon Ho. I'm a fourth-year OHSU MDMP student, and I'm going to use my example to illustrate three things. Number one, the financial burden on the students. Number two, how the financial burden would affect the choice of specialty. And number three, how the burden would affect the choice whether to practice in Oregon or not. So a little bit about myself. Obviously, I'm not from Oregon originally. I grew up in Hong Kong, and I'm the first in my family to go to med school and also college. And I'm from a low-income family because basically my parents don't speak English. They only had middle school education. So basically it'll be I need to figure out ways to pay for my tuition expenses. So ways that I try to find for my education, scholarships. I was lucky enough to got a few scholarships. Financial aid, basically, I accumulated a lot of debt because of that, and also I worked very hard. Many students like use their time, the vacation time to travel somewhere else, which I think we all deserve that vacation time, but I worked to a point that I did not take any vacation time, and instead I sacrificed my vacation time to work to in order to fund for myself. I work in a total of, over the past 4 years, I worked in a total of 8 months with the Oregon State DHS, Department of Human Health Services, as an intern. I also work. I also have research projects with the DHS Mental Health Division, which the project is funded. But I have to point out that both the majority of students did not have the opportunity to get funded projects in the state of Oregon. And also I try to conserve, to save, to minimize my expenditure. And one example to illustrate how far I can go to save is that I'm paying only $225 per month for rent, which is ridiculously cheap. Despite all my effort, basically over the past 4 years, 3 years of medical school, 1 year of MPH education, I've accumulated already $140,000, and obviously that does not include the debt I'm going to accumulate during my 4 year of med school. And so point number one, I already illustrated financial burden despite all my effort. And number two, how that will affect my choice of specialty. Obviously, I'm very interested in public health. That's the reason I'm in the MPH program. That's also the reason that I was hired and rehired for to work to intern with the DHS as an intern. And I also had the opportunity to do research projects for the DHS mental health. But it's a well-known fact that public health physicians don't get paid well, and it's also a general belief that it's not a good idea to go into to be a public health physician unless you pay off your debt. So that's the reason that I decided not to pursue, at least at this point, public health, to be a public health physician. And my last point is about the financial burden on whether students will go to choose to practice in Oregon. I am going to do a residency in psychiatry. But again, it's not a well-paid specialty. It's a little bit higher than public health. But I think the point is, over the past few months, because we are interviewing at different places, we're trying to figure out how we rank our residency programs. I did a little bit of research. Basically, if we compare, for example, just an example, Oregon and Washington. Washington, their government is willing to invest a lot more in the school medicine there. And as a result of that, they get more funding from the NIH. So when I pursue my residency, basically I can consider NIH funding also. And basically, Oregon, OHSU, among all the West Coast programs, is ranked the lowest in terms of NIH funding in psychiatry. In the year 2005, there's only $2 million for OHSU. And the highest is UCSD of $38 million. OHSU is ranked the bottom. It's ranked 10, basically the bottom. I have a lot of reasons to stay, and I do want to stay. I have family here in the Portland area. I have a lot of connections, professional connections here in Oregon. I love this program. This is a very nice program. Faculty are working very hard, very receptive to students' opinion. But unfortunately, because of the funding issues, I have to say that honestly, I did rank University of Washington higher than OHSU because of the funding issue. So basically, I hope I can illustrate funding issues is a big deal, and it would affect students' choice a lot. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ho, will you make me one promise? But before you practice, you take a vacation. Will you do that? He's not even going to say yes. I can't even do it.
All right. My name is Daniel Berg. Actually, I'm a first-year medical student. I want to thank Matt for letting me go in his spot. But we actually share one thing in common, that we both went back east to go to school, and I spent 8 years back east before I came back to Oregon. And going to OHSU was the goal after I graduated to get into medical school here. But I can tell you, in my situation, I had to beg to get my spot back because I accepted a placement at another medical school because I talked to my family down in Roseburg, and I talked to other people, and they were not confident in the Oregon State's commitment to a medical education. And that happened during 2004, and having to reinstate the funds. You know, it has nothing to do with the education because it's a stellar education, but this extending the medical program to more students into greater places into making it a really innovative program, more so than it has been in the past, is going to inspire students. And I know them because I went to school with them back east to come back to Oregon to go to OHSU and to inspire them that they know that the legislator has the same commitment to funding medical education as they do to committing in their medical education and practicing beyond that. Thank you.
Thank you. That was that was compelling. So did you say you were taking Graham's place?
Matt's.
Oh, Matt. Okay.
Yeah. I'll be right here.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we're almost done here. In fact, I think this is the last panel if we can have four people. Is Emily Katz here?
She left.
She gave us her place.
I have Graham, Slater, Julia. Julia, what's your last name? One more time, please.
Monk Bowl.
Thank you. I would have mispronounced that. Kathleen Kuntz. And then is Judith Woodruff here? Can you just come up and so it will be the last one?
Okay, Mr. Chair, my name is Graham Slater. For the record, I'm the administrator of the Workforce and Economic Research Division of the Oregon Employment Department. I've distributed written testimony to you, some numbers from our report. We were the ones that did the needs assessment required by Senate Bill 882 from the last session. Some numbers were shared with you on Thursday, and I know they sparked some interest. My main purpose is to come before you and say, when we did that report, if you look, we analyzed 71 healthcare occupations. We identified 17 that we believe do have a shortage, and nursing is one of those 17. So when we looked at the size of the occupation, the number of openings, the retirements, the vacancies, because we surveyed and found out there were essentially 2,000 vacancies across the state, our conclusion, when you put all of that stuff together and many of the things you've heard, is that there is a shortage as far as nursing in Oregon. And we just wanted to go on the record because maybe there was some confusion about that from Thursday's hearing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, for the record, my name is Julia Monkfold, and I am the program coordinator of the Lane Community College School of Nursing in Eugene, Oregon. I've been an RN in Oregon for over 30 years, an educator there for more than 20 years. I drove up from Eugene today to ask you to please continue funding for the OHSU School of Nursing. Two ways it impacts me and my program directly. Number one, we are beginning to start the OCNE Consortium in the fall, and I have for 70 to 80 positions, spaces, I have almost 400 applicants, and their first question is always, we really are going to be able to get our bachelor's degree in the Eugene-Springfield area from OCNE? And I say yes. It is huge in my area to be able to have this. Please continue that funding. And the second thing is that I have 18 faculty, and probably five of them will be gone in the next 3 years. I have three positions that are open right now. We need the master's in nursing education from in Oregon. This is our only way to get it, and there's no way around it. We have to have it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Glazio, members of the committee, I just want to thank you all for staying past 4:30. I really appreciate your time. My name is Kathleen Kuntz. I'm a registered nurse. I'm a graduate of Southwest Northern Community College as well as OHSU's nursing program. My job for the last 5 years has been to immerse myself in workforce shortages and strategies to help address those. I work for Peace Health Urban Region, as Dr. Staff does, that was here earlier, and we're looking at shortages for our hospital in Florence, rural community, as well as Cottage Grove and Eugene. I don't have anything new to say other than it's a matter of patient safety, it's a matter of money, it's a matter of our community, it's a matter of economic development. When we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, up to millions of dollars, to bring in travelers and agency nurses from other states and other areas, that's money that should be going to our communities, and it simply cannot because the nurses are not there, the physicians are not there, and the other specialists are not there. So we, as an organization, strongly support all of the issues around OHSU funding, and I would just say this is great, it's important, it's not enough, but it's really good. You know, it's going to take so much more. As an organization, we put millions of dollars into our own community around education, and that's to add to what happens, the money coming from the legislature, money's coming from philanthropic organizations that Judith will speak to, but all of those things have to be working together to solve the issues. Thank you.
Chairman Glazio and members of the committee, my name is Judith Woodruff, and I'm the program director for nursing at the Northwest Health Foundation, which is a private foundation, independent foundation that was created 9 years ago to provide resources for health and healthcare issues. I just wanted to reiterate everything that everyone said about the nursing shortage, but I wanted to point out a couple of areas that were not brought up that I think are very important for you to consider. One is that the shortage in public health is currently identified at about 20% of the nurses, the 20% shortage already in public health. I queried the public health nursing director for Multnomah County, who indicated that she currently has 6 to 8 openings at any one time, and that's every day she's trying to fill those 6 to 8 openings. Statewide, the shortages are greater than 20% because in rural areas where there may only be one or two public health nurses, if you lose one, you have a 50% shortage right there. So keep in mind that public health nursing, which predominantly are educated at OHSU because it requires a baccalaureate degree and sometimes higher, is very important to this state in order for us to be prepared for bioterrorism, for emergencies, anything that we're going to be facing in the next 10 to 15 years. If we don't have public health nurses on staff, then we won't be prepared. There was recently a report that came out from the Trust for America's Health indicated that Oregon fails in public health preparedness, and one of the 10 key indicators is the nursing shortage. So I'd like just to have you address the issues of public health. The other issue, which I think has been also somewhat neglected in this discussion, is around geriatric nursing. Oregon Health Sciences University has one of five centers of geriatric nursing excellence that was funded by the John A. Hartford Foundation and has been for more than 5 years. That center, which for which OHSU can be greatly proud,
is constantly and currently training PhD nurses in geriatric nursing in order to be the faculty for geriatric nursing in the future. An area where we see a growing need, I also queried the Long-Term Care Association and found that they're currently, they estimate somewhere around 350 openings for RNs in long-term care across the state right now. So if you're looking at two areas where outside of hospital settings, which has been the predominant discussion about nursing over the last few years, you see shortages everywhere now, not 5 years from now, but now. The average age of a public health nurse is over the age of 50, and most of them are planning to retire in the next 5 years. Most of them also have 30 years of experience that cannot be replaced by the nurses that are coming in out of school right now. But I do want you to be, I guess I want to finish with the idea that you should be very proud of what the work of OHSU has been doing in the School of Nursing. The Oregon Consortium for Nursing Education is a national model. It is a phenomenal national model, and you should be very proud of the work that's been done by OHSU and the community colleges. There are 11 states that are currently looking at replicating the OCDE model. And that's before we've even really rolled it out very far. So you can see where the shortage and the approach to responding to that shortage has been very highly watched by other states. Hawaii is ready to purchase a program right off the shelf if we had one, but we don't. So I would hope that you would be proud of the work that the School of Nursing has done so far in order to expand the reach of nursing education. From the Northwest Health Foundation's perspective, we have invested well over $3 million in nursing education in the last 5 years. We will continue to support innovative program development, but we're not there to fund OHSU School of Nursing in its entirety. We can't do that. You can. And we hope that you would continue to support the governor's budget with regards to OHSU's budget today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And are there any comments or questions before I make a couple of comments? I just wanted to say thank you to everybody that took the time to come down, and I apologize for the short amount of time. It's just what happens, but believe me that the testimony is very powerful, and it adds an enormous amount. So I don't want you to feel as if, especially students who I know your time is well, not to say that your faculty and everyone else's time, but I just want to say I really appreciate it, and I hope you do stay in Oregon, and hope we can do things right so that there is an incentive to stay and for future med students. I can tell you also just personally, there's a lobbyist who lives in my house. My wife is she's a family nurse practitioner, and so these issues kind of resonate. And then I have a brother-in-law who's a radiologist who I think went into that a lot because of financial aspect of it, but we'll get it. So, it's very effective, and we heard, I think, new information and arguments that I think we hadn't necessarily considered. So thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. And with that, close the public hearing on, I can't remember the Senate bill, on OHSU, and we are adjourned. 29. Bye.